Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Now, we were scheduled to speak today with Gershon Baskin, Israel's most famous hostage negotiator, about unofficial hostage negotiations. Israel isn't formally negotiating. We're still going to do that right now. But last night, Gershon made public a stunning letter that may affect those talks. Gershon Baskin, also a peace activist, is called the only Israeli who's kept up direct contact with leaders of Hamas. He's now breaking ties with one, Ghazi Hamid, someone he's known for 18 years since they negotiated the release of Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit. Gershon Baskin, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, this letter, it's revealing on so many levels the obvious personal relationship you had with Ghazi and the seething anger. You start with, "I believe this will be the last time I ever communicate with you. I don't think you have the courage to answer. You've lost your moral code. You've crossed a line." You detail some of the attacks of October 7th. I understand the motivation was October 7th, obviously, but what's going on here?
Well, I have never described anyone in Hamas as being moderate, except for Ghazi Hamid. I have described people that I'm in contact with in Hamas and people I've observed over the years as being pragmatic, which is different than being moderate. Ghazi Hamid is someone who I've talked extensively about peace, about long-term ceasefires, about ending the blockade and the siege on Gaza. We've talked philosophy, religion, family, you name it. I mean, in 17, 18 years, we've had more than 1,000 conversations. I visited him in Gaza twice before 2007. We met twice in Cairo. When this war broke out, I immediately contacted him. He was the first person in Hamas and said, "What's going on?" And I understood that they already had hostages. And I started talking about a humanitarian release of women and children. Initially, our talks were quite focused on a deal, and I proposed something. There are women and minor prisoners in Israeli prisons, and I suggested that as soon as possible do an exchange at that time. I immediately also contacted Israelis who have the ability to speak to people in the Israeli war cabinet, and I spoke to someone in the Egyptian intelligence. And in fact, what I started doing immediately was trying to create links between people who have to talk to each other to negotiate some kind of deal. And this went on. On the first night, I learned that his home was bombed by Israel, and I contacted him and said, "Is it true?" And he said, "Yes, it's true." And I said to him, "You know, if they're going after you, you're a person who helped to save the life of an Israeli soldier, then no one in Hamas has impunity here. Everyone is going to be attacked." I asked him about his family, and he didn't answer. Our talks went on over the next days. And then I received a phone call from someone who I haven't heard from since 2005. He was the advisor on Hamas to Yasser Arafat. And he called me and he told me, "You know, I spoke to your friend the other day. You know, he's in Beirut." And I said, "What? He's not in Gaza?" And then I learned he's been in Beirut for a few months. And when I asked him about his family and he didn't answer, I understood that his family was with him. And I was just taken back. I mean, I know this man. He deserted his people at a time that he had to know that something big was happening. But let's put the personal stuff on the side. The straw that broke the camel's back was when he appeared in an interview 2 days ago after he's been denying that Hamas did what it did. That's what he was saying on camera. "We don't kill women. We don't kill children." Then he stopped denying it and he said, "We did it. We're going to continue to do it until we annihilate Israel." He's obviously, something has happened to his mind, or he's under the influence of other people who are more extreme than him in Hamas. We talked about a deal. I asked him if he sent it to the Qataris, and when I checked on the Israeli side, a completely different message went to them. So I understood that not only was he disconnected mentally, morally from what was going on, he was actually disconnected from the decision-making circle as well.
Gershon, what incredible detail you give us. And it explains this letter, because you go on to say, you know, when you were working with Palestinians, which you do, when they asked for help, you'd send them to Ghazi because he was the minister of social welfare. But now you say in this letter, you don't care about them. You built Hamas tunnels and bunkers for your own people. You ran away, deserted your people. And then this incredibly powerful sentence, I'm sure you took your privileged family with you. Just like your sick F-bomb coward leaders in Qatar on red carpets and five-star hotels, we know most of the leadership of Hamas is living in luxury in other countries. We can hear your betrayal. We can hear your anger. What do you say to people who say, you know, but this is Hamas? Were you duped before or something?
Yeah, I never had any illusions about who they are and what they stand for and what they want. I have no regrets over the 17 years that I've been talking to Hamas, and I will talk to anyone if I think it has a possibility of saving human lives. I know that without Ghazi Hamad, Gilad Shalit would have died in captivity. I know that over the last 8 years, when we've talked about the other people who were held in Gaza and about changing the nature of life, and I have never disagreed with Ghazi that the core issue that we need to address is the continued Israeli occupation over the Palestinian people, the need for Palestinians to have freedom and liberation and self-determination, but also the need of the Palestinians to recognize Israel's right to exist. I have never hidden my agenda with anyone, and not with Ghazi Hamad or other people in Hamas.
So Gershon, your goal was also to build relationships for the Palestinians, but also for the state of Israel. Now you're ending a relationship. Could you read a little of the last line of your letter?
Sure. The last line of the letter is, millions of Palestinians are paying the price of your hate, your fanatic ideology, and your lack of humanity. I never want to speak to you again. You don't deserve to speak to someone like me. I want to comment that this is specifically directed to him and for the things that he is doing now. One of my closest Palestinian friends, a dear friend who lives in East Jerusalem, said, Gershon, don't send the letter. We may need this connection in the future. And I explained to him the horrific things that Ghazi Hamad has been saying on television to the media. He is the face of what they did on October 7th. I recognize the need to talk to our enemies, and I will continue to talk to our enemies. I will talk to anyone if it helps to save lives and if it helps eventually to make peace between Israel and the Palestinians. I have contacted, since the war began on October 7th, more than 100 Palestinian friends and colleagues in Gaza. Many of them cannot communicate with me. I don't know how many of them are still alive. The saddest one was just last night when a young woman who had an abusive husband, and I encouraged her to leave her husband, is now homeless in Gaza. Her house was destroyed. She's breastfeeding, and she's sleeping in the street, and she wrote to me, I'm hungry. This broke my heart. I know this woman, and there are so many others like her. We are experiencing the most extreme trauma that Israel and the Jewish people have faced since the Holocaust, and the Palestinians are facing the most extreme trauma that they have faced since the Nakba of 1948. This is what's going to be our opening page when this horror is over, and we're going to have to face the reality that we're still here. We're still living between the river and the sea, two peoples who need to look at each other in the eyes and say, all of us must have the same right to the same rights.
Gershon, we hear your heart is broken for this Palestinian friend, the woman, and I hear your anger, but is your heart also a little broken at losing this friendship with your Palestinian co-negotiator?
It's really not personal. Of course, I feel hurt and betrayed by him, but what we're dealing with is so much bigger than the personal relationship that I had with this man. We were never friends. We were two people on two sides of conflict who I had great hopes that our connection would help lead us all to a better future. Mm-hmm. And if my heart is broken, it's because of coming to the understanding that the possibility of any kind of accommodation with Hamas, which is part of the Palestinian people, is not possible.
Gershon Baskin, a hostage negotiator, peace activist, will post his letter at hereandnow.org to his former co-negotiator. a leader of Hamas. Gershon, thank you so much, and wishing you well.
Thank you very much.